This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Hello, everybody. This is HPC Wire Soundbite for Friday, May 22nd. I'm Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research, together again with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. How are you today, Michael?
Great. How are you doing, Addison?
Doing fine. It was Interop this week. We found some noteworthy announcements around both Ethernet and InfiniBand and what happens when the worlds start to collide. But before we get to that, Michael, you had some outstanding coverage of the launch of Wolfram Alpha. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Wolfram Alpha is launched this week. In case you missed the news, Wolfram Alpha is Stephen Wolfram's new computational knowledge engine. Stephen Wolfram is obviously from of Mathematica fame, and this week he launched his computational knowledge engine called Wolfram Alpha, and he's been working on this for several years. And it's sort of like a cross between a calculator and an encyclopedia. And the interest to us is the whole software system runs on top of an HPC infrastructure, something like 10,000 CPUs across 5 data centers. And at least one of those clusters is very HPC-like. It's the R-Smart cluster, which is like 40 teraflops, and it's just pure HPC. It's InfiniBand powered, and something like 3,800 CPUs. I think it's Dell servers.
Well, you played with Wolfram Alpha a little bit, Michael. What do you think? Cool application?
It was very cool. I had a lot of fun with it. It's a very interesting tool, and it's actually a good learning tool. I learned a lot just playing with it over the weekend. It's a natural language processing to ask questions. It's a little immature, but it's a great start.
I agree with you. I tried it a little bit myself and very quickly found the chemical properties of aspartame and the diagonal length of a regular 17-gon. So it's very interpretive if you've got that sort of query.
Right, and it's got a very large database. I think it's something like 10 trillion data items. It's not a complete database by any stretch of the imagination. But it's got a lot of information, and you can access it in a lot of different ways, and you can do computation on it, which is the most interesting part. Unlike Google or any kind of search engine, you can apply computational questions to it and develop graphs and all sorts of comparisons. You can do correlations on different parts of data, which I found very interesting. And it outputs the data in different formats, graphs, musical notes, text, mathematical symbols. Certainly for scientists, for technical people, it is quite intuitive. For the layperson, it's a little harder to handle, and it got reviewed by a number of people this week in the press, and I thought really that there was a lot of unfair criticism of it. People generally made a couple mistakes with it. They compared it to Google. They thought it should work like Google, or it should work like a search engine, and that you would just throw terms at it, and it would spit out some information, which is not what it was intended to do at all. It was intended to apply calculations and to give you quantitative information. And the other mistake people made is they looked at this thing as a static application. It just launched, 7 days ago. People thought, well, this is it. But the whole idea is this is just starting. Stephen Wolfram talked about this thing as, this is going to evolve over a long period of time, and here's sort of 1.0 or maybe even 0.1.
Or an alpha version, if you like.
Yeah, exactly, alpha version. So this is going to evolve, and if you check out their blog, they're updating it constantly. They're getting feedback constantly, and it's amazing. I don't know how many people are working on this. I'm assuming it's less than hundreds, but they are inputting data, new data. They're fixing problems as we speak. And it's slowly going to get better. And after years, if it manages to survive, it's going to be a much different system than it is today. If you thought back on what Google or some of these search engines looked like a decade ago and how they behaved, I think you'd realize how far something like this can come in 10 years. And I think if Wolfram Alpha sticks around, it's going to be quite impressive 10 years from now. It's already quite impressive to me. I think it's a really interesting application. Obviously,
I think you're certainly right that this is not Google, and that there is a very rapid change in this part of the industry. I don't think Google looked like anything at all 10 years ago to that point. This is not a Google application. It's, in fact, more useful for certain types of scientific inquiry. If you need to know a molar volume of something, or you've got an organic chemistry question, you probably can find that stuff using Google, but it'd be a multi-step process to finally find the web page or the reference you're looking for, whereas this is more of a calculator that's designed to give you your answer directly.
Exactly. Plus, you can correlate it to other things, so you can find that calculation compared to another calculation. You can find the molecular structure of aspirin versus aspartame, or does the type of things that a technical person or even just somebody interested in correlating different types of data would be interested in, something that would be very hard to do via Google, because you'd have to do all the legwork yourself. You'd have to basically do the research. And this is able to shortcut a lot of that.
We keep comparing it to Google. It brings up kind of a higher level question. Do you see this as a cloud application within HPC?
Well, yeah, in a way it is. I mean, it's one type of model in that it's using a cloud type infrastructure, just as Google does. I mean, the actual infrastructure is different than Google's. It's smaller, for one thing, but it's also more HPC-like. But it is a cloud in that the infrastructure behind it is very much highly parallel, and it's very much hidden from the end user. You just use this thing as a service. I mean, it's a web application tool. So in that sense, it is like Google.
Yeah, I agree. I think as this evolves, you'll see this is kind of an HPC cloud application in that, it's got an HPC back end. I don't think it's yet answering HPC types of questions, but you could see this as a possible predecessor to a software as a service kind of model, where now I need to calculate a flow over a shape or something like that. But it comes up in the comparisons to Google again, in that as we keep trying to apply definitions of cloud to the industry, we have to remember that the term cloud was popularized by Google to begin with, just to describe what they're doing, not necessarily to describe a complete market phenomenon. So as we keep looking at definitions of what cloud is and what cloud isn't and what the opportunities for cloud are within HPC, I think it's important to continue to look at the definitional aspects of that and what are the different models of cloud in HPC, whether it's software as a service or infrastructure as a service, or providing overflow cycles to a user who's running at capacity and has an incremental application to run, or whether it's empowering someone to newly enter HPC for the first time because they don't have the resources or the expertise. It's kind of fun to look at a calculator like Wolfram Alpha and ask the question of what does this mean for cloud in HPC, because I think this is a little piece of the puzzle.
Right, exactly. And I think the Wolfram folks have left the door open here. I mean, they've got an API as a way to attract, commercial business to this thing. So if you have a business that wants to use this type of calculation model, you can contact this Wolfram group and hook into this and run the software suite on your own internal database and do sorts of calculations. And that could be a simulation, or it could be something entirely different. But I definitely think it is HPC, at least in the broader sense of the word. And I think it is potentially an important model that cloud might be for HPC.
Well, it's an interesting story at any rate. And I read your article and your blog both with relish. Transitioning from that now to some of the other stories in the news this week, we had some networking news, especially around interop. But getting into some of the InfiniBand companies looking at lossless Ethernet fabrics, what do you have for us there?
Yeah, this has sort of been an ongoing story with our InfiniBand vendors. They've been looking at Ethernet for a while, and I think with lossless Ethernet becoming so prominent, and with data center Ethernet, what's called data center bridging by the IEEE, data center Ethernet by Cisco, and converged Ethernet by other people. That's going to become a standard soon, any day now, and bring lossless Ethernet into the data center as a standard. And InfiniBand vendors are looking at this as an opportunity because lossless Ethernet is a lot like InfiniBand. And in fact, it's in a way, it's more like InfiniBand than traditional Ethernet. So they're looking at this in a way that they can apply their expertise and get into this market. And last week, it was Voltaire who was talking about their Ethernet switches that they're developing now, and they're going to launch this summer, at least they're planning to launch them. And this week, it was Mellanox that was talking about the new Ethernet technology at Interop in Las Vegas. The thing Mellanox was demoing was a low-latency Ethernet protocol. It's essentially InfiniBand over Ethernet, but it's also called RDMA over Ethernet, which is a little confusing because that's what people might think IWARP is. But it's actually sort of a low-latency version or a lower-latency version of IWARP, and it's potentially something that could usurp IWARP as the RDMA protocol.
Now, Mellanox is demonstrating... This is noteworthy because this has as much to do with I/O and data management as it does with system fabrics in that case.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And it does, and it spans commercial HPC markets. IWARP is being looked at by HPC users plus commercial, more commercial users. And RDMA over Ethernet is, in some fashion, is going to be probably the low-latency Ethernet method that's going to be used in the data center, but the version that Mellanox is demonstrating looks like it's a much higher performance protocol than IWARP is going to be. It is to IWARP what fiber channel over Ethernet is to iSCSI. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. This fits perfectly, though, into Mellanox's vision of using an InfiniBand-style fabric for data center networking, because if this RDMA Ethernet protocol becomes a standard, this would fit perfectly into Mellanox's vision of using an InfiniBand-style fabric for data center networking, because their vision is basically to use sort of an InfiniBand backbone on top of an Ethernet, or I should say underneath an Ethernet fabric to run lossless traffic. Now, getting the IEEE to establish this as a standard, you know, is going to be somewhat problematic. I mean, I think from Mellanox's point of view, this is quite interesting, and it's definitely being looked at by different standards bodies. Nobody's signed up to it yet, but IEEE is looking at it, I think, and I think the InfiniBand Trade Association is looking at it too. And there's a good chance it will become a standard, but getting those two standard bodies to talk to each other is going to be tricky. And getting IEEE to establish standards is tricky in itself. It's just such a there's a lot of stakeholders in this Ethernet, and it's a frustratingly slow process to get Ethernet standards established. Even you can see in fiber channel over Ethernet, it's taken several years to get a standard out, and it's still not a standard today. It's working its way out there, but.
Well, in these situations where you have so many standards, what that means is really you don't have any standard at all, right?
Right. And so you end up having vendors come out with pre-standard versions of hardware in advance of standards, and that sort of pushes the standards body in certain directions and helps them, actually. It's not something you want. You don't want hardware coming out there, and people don't want to buy non-standard hardware, and yet that's what ends up happening because... People need the functionality, and there's nothing there yet, so they need to buy what they need to have.
I think that's a good analysis, Michael. And what I see is significant in this new offering from Mellanox is really you're capitalizing on this industry trend toward InfiniBand, including for things like RDMA. When we surveyed this, we found, now this was before this announcement, but we found people were a lot more likely to want to do RDMA over InfiniBand, twice as likely to do that as opposed to IWARP or even more an IWARP than something like SRP or ICER with SCSI. So really, InfiniBand is the direction people wanted to be going in for RDMA, and this provides another option for that higher level of performance.
Right. Yeah, in the HPC market where you're serving, it's certainly InfiniBand. It's certainly the most popular way. I think you found that it was it had like a 60% market share since 2007, which means it's majority interconnect. In the HPC market, I think InfiniBand will continue to maintain its prominence.
I appreciate you bringing that up. That came out in a new press release from the InfiniBand Technology Alliance.
Right, and UTabor Research, as well as a few other analyst firms, sort of were on the same page here, saying InfiniBand is growing as they expected, and it's dominating the HPC market right now.
Yeah, it is dominating the HPC market now with the majority of implementations as a system interconnect, as you were saying, with that 60% figure is what it's getting up to. But beyond that, we're also seeing increased penetration among the sites that are using it as a system interconnect. Many are also using it for LAN or storage interconnect. So that increased performance is definitely helping the penetration of InfiniBand across the HPC market, and it seems every time we do a survey on it, InfiniBand's increased its share.
Right. And even though the InfiniBand vendors are getting into these Ethernet products, they're definitely committed to the InfiniBand market and HPC. They see it as a growth market as well, and even though their products will be coming out over their Ethernet products will be coming out over the next months and years, they don't see necessarily those products penetrating HPC to the extent InfiniBand is, at least for the high performance requirements that most of these clusters and systems have.
Well, and it's an important part of the discussion, because ultimately InfiniBand is going to start to reach a limit as to how much it can penetrate as an HPC system interconnect. A lot of its initial growth came in displacing a lot of the high-end proprietary fabrics, and certainly it's taken a few bites out of Ethernet, but I won't be so bold as to say that Ethernet's going to completely go away. And therefore, you get to where if you're going to keep looking for growth in InfiniBand, it needs to come in one of two ways. One is penetrating more of the different types of networks within an HPC site, getting into those LANs, getting into the storage areas, and these new announcements that you're seeing from IBTA, from Mellanox, looking at lossless Ethernet implementations, looking at RDMA over InfiniBand, you're going to start having more penetration into more parts of the ecosystem. And the other area where InfiniBand can look for growth is outside its HPC stronghold, and I think you're also starting to see InfiniBand penetrating more different application types. So that's where you're going to see continued growth from InfiniBand.
Right. I think the InfiniBand vendor story is that they see that technology as their highest performance technology. So for those users, HPC and otherwise, they're going to offer InfiniBand as the interconnect of choice. And then for people who need Ethernet connectivity for whatever reason, they don't need the performance requirements, or they need, legacy application support, they've got an Ethernet product there too. So they've got a decent story if they can pull it off. And in a sense, also, I think for these vendors, it's also somewhat of a lifeboat, because someday it might be possible that these technologies will blend enough that Ethernet will take over, or it'll become one thing somehow, and then they'll have a path to continue their work in just Ethernet an Ethernet world.
Well, I think that's the path you've seen Miracom take, where it used to be all on Miranet, but they've transitioned to where most of their business is Ethernet-based business.
Exactly, that's a great point.
So it's not just InfiniBand; it's affecting the entire high-end interconnect space, but certainly a trend that's worth continuing to watch, eh?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be looking at this, and it'll be interesting to see InfiniBand and Ethernet sort of blending together and seeing sort of which side pulls which one in which direction over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Furthermore, we had the whole flotilla of press releases around Interop coming in. I think now we're getting close to June, it'll be about time for us to start seeing the ramp up of announcements heading into ISC. So we'll have a lot more news to look forward to in weeks ahead.
Yeah, I hope to see a lot of news about that. It'll be an interesting month and interesting couple months.
Good talking to you as always, Mike. We'll talk to you again next week.
Good talking to you, Addison.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.